This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Everything that Richard and myself have been up to on a Thursday morning. It's June the 27th. Big talker for us this morning, and the thing we got the most messages on, was a new report coming out from Robert Half, the recruitment people. They say that employers are telling them about quite a significant uptick in the number of people moving out to Dubai to search for a job without having a job, maybe even bringing families, kids with them. You're going to hear from Gareth Almatrui on the podcast this morning. He's an associate director for the Middle East at Robert Half, telling us what that's doing to wages. We've also been getting some tax advice ticking down to a new tax deadline from Niraj Ravput. He's a partner at Orifa Middle East Tax Advisory. And John Lyons, the managing director of Espace Real Estate, has opened his books for us a week or so early, giving us a look at what Espace and its brokers have done in terms of the number of transactions and the value of them in Q2.
Lots of messages this morning about the recruitment story that you've picked up on. This is the influx not of millionaires and billionaires, but of people who want to be millionaires and billionaires.
Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna zig a zig.
Yeah, indeed. New report coming out from the recruitment people, Robert Half. The employers that they've been speaking to, at least half of them, say that they've seen an influx of people who are proper moving here without jobs and hoping to sort it out once they've unpacked. Gareth Almatrui is the Associate Director for the Middle East at Robert Half. We asked him, what does that mean for companies who are hiring and what they're able to pay staff?
We are seeing salaries flat and in some cases going the wrong way. Clients are aware there's talent in the market and there's candidates relocating without roles. So it's a candidates from the clients are in the driving seat at the moment versus candidates. So candidates are willing to take maybe a 10, 15% pay cut of those who are immediately available on the ground. What we are seeing are candidates who are based here, who are looking potentially to make a move locally, are struggling to make a move because salaries are kind of coming down. So it's a tough market at the moment, but for those who are relocating here and are immediately available, we are securing work very, very quickly for them.
Right, Gareth Almatrui, Associate Director for the Middle East at Robert Half. We wanted to know an awful lot more about things like how long people who were taking jobs that were a little bit under market rate were staying for. Is it purely a stepping stone? You can hear the full interview with him in about 15 minutes.
Also been getting a real estate take on this. John Lyons, Managing Director, Espace Real Estate, joined us in the studio. We asked him, what's your experience moving here to Dubai in the UAE without jobs and looking to jump on the real estate bandwagon?
Yeah, I think it's a good sign for Dubai, but it helps to shorten the recruitment cycle. If any of those people are looking for a job in real estate, please reach out to Espace, because we're actually playing to the same trend. We've expanded the size of our recruitment team. We've got 4 people in our recruitment team now, and we're looking to recruit our target, ambitious targets, 300 people over the next 12 months. It would be much easier for us to do that if the candidates are here already in Dubai. But the reality is we've still got to go and run our recruitment campaigns in other countries in order to try and achieve those targets.
Full interview with John on the Bite Size podcast just after 10 this morning, and the interview with Gareth as well. Loads of questions on that. Keep them coming, please. Now, it's not often the country of Georgia gets not one but 2 mentions in Serena Kelly's headlines, but today is that day in terms of football. They beat Portugal last night in the Euros, progressing to the knockout stages of Euro 2024, and they make the Business Breakfast headlines as well because they have signed, sealed and delivered a trade deal with the UAE, Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, in honour of this double achievement. Let's hear some Georgian music now. This is not the top of the Spotify or Apple Music charts in Georgia at the moment. This is their entry for the Eurovision Song Contest just a few weeks ago. It got 34 points, came in 21st, a creditable showing. But when it comes to the economy, Brandy, and that's what we care about as the BB, as the Business Breakfast, fighting talk from Thani El Saoudi yesterday, the UAE trade minister, wants to triple trade with Georgia, right?
Yeah, so we got geekily interested first thing this morning in the Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreements. They're aiming, or at least they were last year, aiming at signing about 28, 29 of these things. And by my count, they're about halfway through that. We're really interested in how you measure the results of it. And I think it's going to become kind of a staple Business Breakfast question if we're asking anyone who's doing business whether or not they are seeing an increase in trade and whether it's goods or services with SEPA countries. We also realised we didn't really know the difference between a SEPA and an FTA. Is it just the term that the cool kids are now using for a free trade agreement?
It may well be. So to find out more, we spoke to an economist, Jeanne Walters, senior economist at Emirates NBD. This is what she told us.
It's arguably too early to be able to assess the economic impact of these trade agreements, with five of the six SEPAs currently in force only being in effect for around 15 months or less. Nonetheless, some evidence can be found in a recent announcement by Dr. Al-Zayoudi, Minister of State for Foreign Trade, who noted that non-oil foreign trade with countries with whom SEPAs have either been implemented or are nearing implementation rose almost 25% year on year in 2023. More generally, a study by the IMF suggests that the reduction in tariffs on trade as part of the UAE SEPA agreements should raise the level of UAE real GDP over the medium term.
Jeanne Walters of Emirates NBD. And of course, the aforementioned Thani Al-Zayoudi yesterday was in Washington, D.C. in the United States, holding talks with the U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo about, but not about an FTA or a SEPA, just about bilateral trade ties. So what's the difference between a CPA and FTA and just having a chat about trade over a cup of tea in the White House? I don't know. But it's good that he's doing these things.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we are having a look at the great job hunt. Robert Half coming out with a new survey, and nearly half of all the employers that the recruiter spoke to said that they are seeing expats emigrate into the UAE without jobs. We are joined by the Robert Half Middle East Associate Director, Gareth L. Maturi. Gareth, it's lovely to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Bradley.
How much of a sea change is this? How does this differ from people just popping out for a month, maybe, having a look on a visit or now on a job hunt visa?
We've seen a significant uptick in candidates relocating from Europe, especially from the UK, without roles. Candidates applying from UK just aren't getting the traction, applying to jobs on LinkedIn or speaking to recruiters. So they are making the decision to jump on a plane and base themselves here, get a short-term rental in the hope of securing a role once they're on the ground.
And how successful are they?
They are being successful. For me personally, we are seeing candidates at your kind of mid-level in finance. So candidates qualified, Big Four background. So you're talking £70,000 to £90,000 a year sterling salaries, jumping on a flight in the dream of securing a role on their arrival, and they are being successful.
Does it make a difference being in market at the moment? Is that the difference between landing something or not a lot of the time?
Oh yeah, of course. We can get candidates in front of clients and we can get roles moving very, very quickly. If you're sitting in the UK and you're applying for jobs, then you've then got the notice periods, you've then got the relocation. Clients here would prefer to see people on the ground, candidates who have committed to making that move. And then we are seeing them secure roles within 1, 2, 3 months. Even last week, we saw a candidate secure a role in 2 weeks on arriving in Dubai.
So one of the questions, and Richard and I have a couple, is that we had was, what stage of career are we talking about here? Are we talking about people who are in the first couple of years of their career, very mobile, just looking after themselves? You're shaking your head, Gareth. How much baggage, physically and emotionally, are people bringing with them?
We're seeing candidates, I would say, late 20s, early 30s. So for me in finance, candidates Big Four trained, maybe 3, 4, 5 years industry experience, looking to make the move. So you're looking at late 20s, early 30s. Saying that, we are seeing families relocate with 1, 2 children. We are seeing candidates sell up in the UK, buy a property here, get the investment visa, so they're committed, they've got an Emirates ID, and they are looking to get back into the job market. So we are seeing candidates across all levels.
Why are they doing this?
Quality of life. I think growth. They're not seeing that in the UK. There's not many places globally at the moment which are posting growth figures like the Middle East. I think gone are the days where candidates are looking at the UAE as a place where they can make significant money. saying that, if you're a candidate earning £70,000-£80,000 in the UK, by the time you take away tax and national insurance, you're taking 19,000 dirhams a month out. Candidates can earn more than that here as a finance manager. So candidates are seeing the UAE as a great place to live. It's safe. It's great to bring up children. And there's huge potential for growth here.
So what does it mean for the companies who are hiring? Being able to find people, the length of time in finding people, and crucially, what they're paying for them?
We are seeing salaries flat and in some cases going the wrong way. Clients are aware there's talent in the market and there's candidates relocating without roles. So it's a clients are in the driving seat at the moment versus candidates. So candidates are willing to take maybe a 10-15% pay cut of those who are immediately available on the ground. What we are seeing are candidates who are based here who are looking potentially to make a move locally are struggling to make a move because salaries are kind of coming down. So it's a tough market at the moment. But for those who are relocating here and are immediately available, we are securing work very, very quickly for them.
If someone's willing to take a lower starting salary, are you seeing them stick with that first job, though, or is it purely an entry point? I mean, how much loyalty do you get as an employer if you know you're picking someone up for under market rate?
I think candidates are using it as a stepping stone. They're kind of getting the Middle East experience and seeing how things kind of lay within the next first 6-9 months. Saying that, we are seeing some candidates make a move after they've got that kind of UAE experience because they are being underpaid. But clients are aware of this and clients are willing to take that risk when they're taking or they're picking up talent in the market, maybe 10-15% below market rate.
Is it the right talent, though? With this influx of people moving into the market, is it at the seniority with the experience or with the skills that you need?
I would say it's kind of your mid-level. So in finance, as I mentioned, you're getting qualified accountants with initial experience. They haven't got the kind of local experience when it comes to corporation tax. In the tech space, we're seeing a demand for AI and Oracle. But they are filling a gap. And that gap is clients are willing to take that risk at the moment to fill that gap. But for more specialist roles, for candidates maybe with UAE tax experience or kind of legal experience in drafting in Arabic, we're not seeing that talent relocating from Europe and securing roles very, very quickly.
You've also spoken to companies about their hiring outlook. What does the second half of the year look like?
Fantastic. It's looking very, very positive. We've had I think the first 6 months of the year, it's been good. But I think there's been some uncertainty globally, inflation struggles, we've got elections, and I think there's a lot of pent-up demand. So I think the second half of the year, 67% of other people that we surveyed are looking positively towards, half two. So all good.
Where are you seeing the job creation, Gareth?
Across each of the sectors that we operate in. So in tech, we're seeing a significant increase in demand for AI specialists and for candidates with certain experience in Oracle and Java and Python. In finance and accounting, we're seeing a significant increase in demand for FP&A skills. And in legal and HR, we're seeing a significant demand for your mid to senior level talent.
Well, thanks so much for joining us this morning. The Robert Half Middle East Associate Director, Gareth El-Maturi, speaking to us about that research that they've put together, speaking to employers, half of the employers they spoke to, saying that they're seeing people move out here on spec in order to pick up a job.
Yeah, it was interesting that he said that salaries are coming down on the back of that. The power is with the employer at the moment. Normally in a booming job market, you tend to see that the employees, the job hunters, have all the power. But the UAE is such a magnet for talent at the moment that it seems from Robert Half, it's the employers.
It was interesting, though, as well, that he was talking about people in their mid-20s to early 30s. He's not necessarily talking about your senior management, is he?
It's not the C-suite he's talking about, no.
No.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right now on the Business Breakfast, we're talking tax.
If you don't want to pay some more, The tax man
cometh. Deadline is 72 hours away for registration. Joining us in the studio to give us some context on this is the tax expert Nirav Rajput, a partner with Orifa Middle East Tax. Morning, Nirav. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Richard. Pleasure.
Okay. Pleasure being here. 72 hours. That's not long. In simple terms, what's the deadline?
So the deadline is for all the resident companies in the UAE. Typically, deadlines for resident companies, they vary. And right now, what we are looking at is for the companies that have obtained their license in the UAE in the month of March or April of any year, they have a deadline of 30th June, that is 72 hours away that you mentioned.
So what do they have to do? Do they have to pay or just register?
Right now, it's only the registration. Once the registration kicks in, they have enough time in order to complete their returns, which is going to be 9 months after the end of their financial year. And then that is the date when they will make the payment of the corporate tax as well.
So what kind of questions are you getting when the phone rings? Is it ringing off the hook at the moment with people who've been a bit lastminute.com?
It is. Indeed, what happens is there is a bit of an assessment which needs to be done. Mostly for the resident companies, it is pretty flat. Depending on the month in which they obtain their license, they will need to register because the timelines have been staggered upon. So, for example, companies that were registered or licensed back in January or February in any year, practically they need to register or they were required to be registered by 31st of May. The second slot practically is for companies which are licensed in the month of March and April. They are required to register by 30th of June, and then the series just goes on. So you can imagine companies have a bit of a confusion at times as to the timelines, but the decision that the FTA rolled out was pretty straightforward, although we were not expecting it to be this complicated. But it is what it is.
So who's got to register? If I think about the Business Breakfast audience, we've got a lot of people who are salaried employees. Doesn't affect them.
No.
We've got a lot of people who work for or own medium and large scale businesses. They know they have to, and that's fine. If it's a big company, you've got an Orifa or your ex-Big Four, aren't you? You've got the Big Four doing it, fine. We know about that. But it's that bit in the middle, and that's quite a big part of the business community here, and therefore our audience. Sole traders, freelancers, small company with 1 or 2 or 3 million dirhams of revenue or profit. There's loads of that about at the moment. What do they do?
Truly, truly. And in fact, in this particular scenario, it is very important for individuals to first and foremost understand whether they undertake a business activity or business in the country. If they cross the threshold of 1 million dirhams in any duration, which is a calendar year, practically
revenue.
If they cross that 1 million, then they are applicable and they should go forward and register. Again, it is not a very simple one because certain incomes are excluded to be considered as a business income. For example, real estate investment income is excluded. Personal investment income is excluded. Salaries and wages are excluded. So we are looking at core business income. Practically, like you mentioned, freelancers or sole proprietors, when they earn anything from a business activity, and if that turnover crosses 1 million dirhams, then they are required to go forward and register.
So they've got to register at 1 million dirhams of revenue, but you don't have to start paying the 9% tax until you hit what figure for a year? Profit?
Practically, the profit should be more than 375,000 dirhams in a year. If it exceeds that threshold, then they are going to be subject to 9% corporate income tax.
Right. So that those are the only exemptions?
Those are the only exemptions. I would also like to mention that there is something known as a small business relief. So what the small business relief does is for all the resident companies, practically, they have a threshold of 3 million. And this threshold is available for 3 years. This exemption is available for 3 years until 31st December 2026. So practically, they can still live to do their business under 3 million and not pay any taxes.
But they still have to register?
They still need to register, yes.
Okay, but so what if my business is 4 million?
If your business is...
Do I pay tax on the 4 million or do I 4 million profit or is the first 3 million exempt?
No, you will simply pay taxes on everything which is more than 375,000, everything at the rate of 9%.
So if I'm earning 3,100,000 dirhams, I might try and... One would never cook the books, and you as an accountant would never encourage that. But it would be in my interest to get that number below, down to 2.9 million.
That's true, yep.
Boost salaries a little bit or something like that, or go buy a new company car. Which brings me on to my last question. What kind of questions are you being asked on from clients who want to be, let's call it, tax efficient, to minimise the amount of tax they pay, but obviously stay within the law? What are the questions you guys at Orif are being asked?
So in a majority of cases, a lot of companies and businesses are established in free zones. As we know, there are many in the UAE. And the free zone regime is not a very straightforward regime. There are several conditions to be met in order to get that exemption. But once you achieve that exemption, it is practically going to bring down your taxes from 9% to 0%. And that practically saves a lot of taxes, right?
But free zone companies do still have to pay profit tax.
They will not be paying taxes if they meet all the conditions and they are qualified free zone person. So practically, they simply go from 9% to 0%. And right now, there is no Pillar 2 rules for large multinational enterprises. So again, they are safeguarded till that point in time.
But what about free zone companies who are doing business offshore?
When you say free zone companies doing business offshore, practically...
Well, if I'm a social media consultancy based in Media City where we are now, we've only got about 20 seconds, but all my clients are in Deira or in Cowanese onshore... Do I still get to dodge the tax bullet?
In that scenario, you won't be able to do much because there are qualifying activities and you need to fall within those qualifying activities, which are by far limited. They are not covering everything in scope.
It's a complicated business, Nira. I appreciate you getting up early to speak to us about it. Thanks very much indeed. I suspect it will not be the last time we speak over the coming weeks and months. But for now, the thoughts there of Nirav Rajput. He's with Orifa Middle East Tax, where he is a partner. Thanks for your time.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Now we are talking property this morning with John Lyons, the Managing Director of Aspers Real Estate. Asking him to open his books a little bit early for us. We're not quite at the end of Q2, but we want to know what kind of business they have done this quarter. John, thanks for staying with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, how is Q2 looking so far?
Q2 looks great. And we were really keen to look at how Q2 has been compared to last year and also compared to Q1. Just to give people who are listening a bit of a sneak preview of what's going to be hitting the headlines a few weeks from now, everyone will be getting ready to prepare their Q2 reports, but obviously we've still got a week to go, so they can't do it. But it doesn't stop us having a look to see where we're at currently.
So let's look how we are compared to Q1 and then how we are compared year on year.
Yeah, so in Dubai, we're already above we looked up to the end of, up to 21st of June. Mm-hmm. We're already in that period beating Q1. So 7% more value of transactions in Dubai. That's across all sectors of the market at over 93 billion dirhams and 9% more transactions, 37,000 transactions. So we've already beaten Q1 with a week to go.
And how does it look if we look at what it looks like compared to last year?
So compared to last year is really encouraging. It just shows how much the market has expanded as it is gearing up to service this population growth that is coming. 45% more in terms of total value and 47% more transactions. And that is Q2 minus 1 week comparison year on year. So we did the same with last year. We subtracted 1 week. So a lot more transactions taking place. What's interesting is that it is both the off-plan market and the secondary market that are contributing to that growth story. It's not as if it's just the off-plan market. Although the off-plan market is a bigger contributor to that story, secondary market is also very active.
Where are we seeing the biggest growth in value, the biggest price appreciation? Is it still in the secondary market, or are we seeing what off-plan property is going for increase as well?
Yeah, so in the off-plan market, there's about 50% more value changed hands this quarter compared to the same period last year. And it's almost 80% more transactions. In the secondary market, it's slightly lower numbers. But if we drill into the detail at a community-specific level, just to give people a flavor for what's actually happening on the ground, take a well-located end-user community like Emirates Living, Springs, Meadows, Lakes. 7% more transactions there, but the average increase in selling price year on year is 33%. And if we drill down a little bit deeper, in the Springs, 17% higher average selling prices this year compared to last year, and 23% higher for the villa market in the Meadows.
And those types of villas saw appreciation, obviously, last year as well. That's the villa market. What about the apartment market?
Apartment market is a different story. And for those listening to the same show 4 weeks ago, will remember me saying that it does feel like the villa townhouse market is where it's at. That's where it's extremely busy. 2 to 15 million villa townhouse market. Apartment market, lower levels of activity. If we look at Dubai Marina, Downtown, Palm Jumeirah and CityWalk as a bit of a barometer for what's actually happening on the ground, we've seen 22% less transactions in those communities combined compared to the same period last year for Q2 minus 1 week, both years. And I think that's a story that has been playing out throughout this quarter, whereby the apartment market is more driven by the financials. And it's also more exposed to the supply pipeline that Dubai has. 76% of the supply pipeline of new properties is apartments. So I think what we've got is an apartment market that is going to be very adequately supplied over the years to come, and that will keep prices in check. But a villa townhouse market that is potentially still going to be undersupplied. There's not a huge amount of supply coming given the population that we're expecting.
With those development handovers, what does the chain look like in terms of the first real swells coming through?
It really starts to pick up in 2025. That's the expected handover pipeline. 25 and 2026 are when we're expecting to see larger numbers of handovers. Some of those might be delayed. So I think you could probably say pushing back to the second half or even the first half of 2026 until we see really meaningful handovers taking place. But what's been encouraging is there's already been quite a lot of handovers taking place during this year. And we've seen a lot of activity in the rental market for some of the properties that have been handed over in Downtown, for example. And the market is really showing its ability to absorb those properties into the market with a huge amount of rental transaction activity taking place. So that's encouraging. It shows that the market needs that supply and it is absorbing that supply very well.
How long can this cycle run? How much longer have we got in it?
I feel like this is a long-term sort of super cycle where Dubai needs supply. It needs to keep prices at a reasonable level. It's good that the apartment market in particular is going to be very adequately supplied because that will keep prices in check. And keeping prices in check is what's needed if we're going to keep fueling population growth. No one's going to move here if it becomes ridiculously expensive. So I think this is a good story where we see the apartment market in particular going to probably move sideways in terms of pricing, which will help people to keep moving here. And the villa townhouse market, that's interesting to observe. I do think that is still undersupplied over the years to come, and we'll probably still see price pressure to the upside in that market.
John Lyons, Managing Director of Espace Real Estate, giving us a sneak peek into Espace's books when it comes to what they've been selling and for how much in Q2. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a DubaiEye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from DubaiEye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.